Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida. Let me begin by thanking Rachel and others for recording this presentation. And let me thank all of the powers that are, whoever they may be, in ACB Radio for doing the hard job here, which is editing this program for later broadcast on ACB Radio. Finally, let me thank George Byes of Talking Communities, whose software makes this program possible. I'd like to welcome everyone. Tonight we have some folks with us who are new to the program, and later we'll hear from a number of folks who we haven't heard from on Tuesday Topics before. Perhaps this is because of the topic that we're dealing with tonight, which I guess I would like to call information delivery for blind folks. I don't want to call it simply radio reading services, because I don't want to limit our discussion just to that. I'm going to speak instead about information access for blind people using audio. Our guest initially tonight was going to be Steve Bauer, and Steve was a longtime operator of the telephone reader service in Kansas. But now, as I understand it, Steve Kincaid, who is also a guest, and I guess patched in perhaps by telephone into Steve's system, is a part of the Kansas telephone reader, or is in any case in Kansas, and we'll hear more about the other Steve, Steve Kincaid, as time goes on. Let me begin by throwing it to Steve Bauer, though, and ask Steve if perhaps you would start off for those folks who may be listening in other parts of the world by giving us a definition of what radio reading service is, and perhaps as well a little bit about its history.
Okay, good evening, everyone. First of all, I'd like to do a real quick introduction of myself, and then I want Steve Kincaid to introduce himself, and then we'll go to your question, Paul. I am totally blind, and when I was in college, I obtained a bachelor's in speech with radio TV as the emphasis area, and that was in the early 70s. At that time, radio reading services were just starting, and the Wichita radio reading service was just beginning, and I produced some programming for them. In the mid-80s, I was actually on their board of directors for a short period of time until some of the, shall we say, more senior citizen members of the board couldn't handle the fact that a blind person was trying to accomplish things with programming and to get things changed to make the service better. Because blind people were supposed to sit there with their hands folded and, oh, this is so wonderful, I can't live without this attitude. And I didn't do that. So I was pushed out of that position. In the mid-90s, 96 to be exact, I founded a nonprofit organization, the Information Access Association Incorporated, and we began the Air Capital telephone reader. Air Capital is based on the fact that Wichita, Kansas has so many aircraft manufacturing plants, is sort of our nickname. So we started that service, and we are not affiliated with the Wichita Radio Reading Service in any way, shape, or form. Although we tried to be, we tried to work together, but they refused to acknowledge our existence. They feel we're trying to put them out of business, which is not the case at all. But we'll get into telephone reader or dial-up services, as some people call them, in just a little bit. At this point, I'd like to ask Steve Kincaid, who is in Lawrence, Kansas, at the University of Kansas, where they operate the Kansas Audio Reader Network, and they also operate a dial-up service as well, which is separate from ours, but we work together quite nicely. I'd like Steve to briefly introduce himself and tell you what he does there, and then we'll drop back and get into radio reading services and hopefully give you a real interesting description of info delivery via radio reading services. Mr. Kincaid?
Okay, thank you, Steve. Since about 1983, I have been involved in radio reading services. And after graduating from the University of Kansas, I went to work full-time for Audio Reader and now work for Kansas Public Radio as well as Audio Reader. I'm the director of engineering for both organizations. And I believe it was about 92 or so, 92, 93, when we created Telephone Reader, which is a dial-up information system for radio reading services and for other purposes, but mainly radio reading services. When we first created it, it was text only, or voice, human voice recording only. And then within just a few years, I think maybe even Steve Bauer was one of the first to, his one of his systems right after ours was one of the first ones to incorporate text-to-speech. And so the system had both human voice recordings and text-to-speech, and it has been evolving ever since. So as Steve mentioned, Audio Reader is out of Lawrence, Kansas. We operate the telephone reader in that part of the state, and Steve Bauer in Wichita operates the telephone reader in that part of the state.
Now, like I say, we'll get back to telephone readers in just a little bit. Radio reading services have become a very important part of life for many people who are blind or visually impaired. In my opinion, the radio reading services are just perfect for those people who later in life have begun to lose their vision and can no longer read and are essentially homebound. Radio reading services provide the reading generally of local newspapers and other publications on a scheduled basis. And you know that if you're going to listen to the local paper, that approximately, say, at 9:30 in the morning, they'll be doing the local and state news, and at 10 o'clock, it's the obituaries, and you can do that. The thing is that it's a captive audience, and it's a small captive audience, but it's an important audience that needs to be served with information, because I think it's really important for anybody who, not only blind or visually impaired people, but I think it's important for everybody to be tuned into what's going on in the community. Be aware of what's happening, what could or could not affect you. The radio reading services are generally delivered via SCA or subcarrier allocation, which basically means that an FM broadcast station has a little sliver of their transmit signal that they break it off and send out the broadcast over closed circuit frequencies. You have to have special receivers. I'm sort of preaching to the choir here, but the special receivers have to be used to receive that signal. And in the beginning, that was the only method of delivery for a radio reading service. As I mentioned before, the Wichita Radio Reading Service is here in Wichita, and I can't tell you what they're doing today because I have not had a receiver for them for many years. I'm going to ask Steve Kincaid now to talk about the different methods of delivery for the Kansas Audio Reader Network, because they do not only use SCA receivers or SCA transmissions, but they have three or four other methods of delivering that audio signal across not only Kansas, but it can go outside of the state as well. So, Steve, it's your opportunity now to blow your own horn and tell them all about that cool equipment you have. And let me tell you, If you've ever get a chance to go tour the Kansas Audio Reader facility in Lawrence there at the University of Kansas, what an amazing facility that Steve has built and designed. It is just, it's a total showcase. So I'll turn it over to you now, Steve.
Okay, thanks. Well, you know, at Audio Reader, we do a very traditional radio reading service broadcast over closed circuit radios, as Steve mentioned. And that goes out to the local area on the subcarrier of KANU 91.5. And then we also put that signal on a satellite, and it's carried then to affiliate stations around the state and in Missouri as well. And they broadcast it on their subcarriers. We also send it out to Smoky Hills Public Television, which carries it on their SAP. Many of you have stereo televisions, and there's that secondary audio program channel in which we broadcast the radio reading service on that channel. Now, like Steve was saying, the problem with radio reading services, you know, it's not really a problem, but it is a challenge of the model is because we're broadcasting on a schedule, it might not exactly match up with your schedule. So we've also decided to use the Internet as a way to be able to help people access that programming. And we have what we call our archive, which is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Every show that we do is being recorded and turned into an MP3 file and posted to a website. So for every show that we do all week long, you can go and download that show, put it on your MP3 player, and then go listen to it on the bus or on the train or wherever you are that you want to hear it. We also take some of that very same audio that we use on the radio reading service, and we put that on the telephone reader system so you can dial in and access that news, again, 24/7 on your schedule. And then another component to the telephone reader system, we take the content that's on the telephone reader system not only the radio reading service content, but the content that is created specifically for the teleoperator system. We take that audio and make that available through a special web interface, which emulates really the keypad of a telephone. And you can get that information then again over the internet. So there is several different ways that we get things around, and it's, I don't know, Steve, if I left any of them out, maybe you can help me there.
Sort of getting into podcasting, and you didn't even realize you were probably doing that. So you see, even though a radio reading service and a telephone reading service or a dial-up service are totally separate, they are so connected. And our service and the one that is in Lawrence, there where Steve Kincaid is, we share content back and forth. So some of the publications that we prepare here in Wichita, we shoot them up on an FTP site, and he grabs them and puts them on his site. The same thing with his system. We grab some stuff from him and put it on our site. We both have toll-free numbers serving the state of Kansas. Steve has local numbers, if I remember right, in not only in Lawrence, where they're based, but in Kansas City. And I can't remember, Steve, if you've still got a Topeka number or not. But the Wichita system, the Air Capital telephone reader, we have local numbers, obviously, in Wichita, in El Dorado, Kansas, in Topeka, Manhattan. And we also have a Lawrence number. So we're separate, but yet we're all working together to try to bring information to people. And information when you want it. When I first had a chance to experience a telephone reader service was back in Washington, D.C., the Washington Ear. And a friend of mine told me about it, and I arranged for a demo code, and I went back there on vacation. My wife and I did, and we were visiting friends. And one afternoon, she and my buddy's wife were both in the kitchen working on dinner and stuff. And I'll go try this telephone thing out. I don't know. So I kind of disappeared downstairs to the guest room, and they came looking for me a couple hours later. I was amazed, and I knew I had to have one of these systems here, and we got it going. And once you get hooked, it's there. It's a terminal disease. You're hooked on the information, and if you don't get to read that newspaper or other publication, you feel like you're missing out. Okay, Paul, is that a long enough answer to your first question, sir?
It is. Next time I'll just let you run the first half, I think. But let me try to fill in a couple of extra pieces. Initially, radio reading services primarily operated with local content. That is, they utilized local newspapers and for the most part operated with volunteer readers who were doing human voice reading through a local public television station or through some other kind of studio. But in terms of acquiring content, there's also been a sea change with the emergence of the InTouch network. Could you guys talk a little bit about what the InTouch network is, what it does, and what its strengths and weaknesses are?
In the past, when I did have an SCA receiver to listen to the Wichita Radio Reading Service, when they weren't airing local material, local newspapers and grocery ads and things like that, which are read all by volunteers, as you mentioned, I did get the chance to listen to some programming read by the InTouch radio network. And this is a network or a radio reading service that is based out of the New York City area, and it's on satellite, and it's picked up by many radio reading services around the country. When different services are not originating their own programming, they will pick up content being read by the InTouch network. And they were probably the first radio reading service to go up on the bird in the sky and to be delivered via satellite. When it comes to reading content, I'd like Steve to talk a little bit how they handle the volunteers. It's totally impressive to me that they start as early in the morning as they do, and they get as much read out, because their main publication is the Kansas City Star. And Steve, quickly tell us about how you guys do the volunteers and your recording facilities that you use there at Kansas Audio Reader.
Well, the volunteers start arriving at about 5:30 in the morning, and this is primarily for the telephone reader content, which is the Kansas City Star. Again, that's the main publication on the telephone reader. These volunteers will arrive, and some will read for 30 minutes and some will read for an hour. But the goal is to have the entire Kansas City Star read by about 9:30 or 10 each morning, and this goes on 7 days a week. The volunteers coming during the week are generally people that are working either on campus or on their way around campus, working in the community. So they just, you know, leave for work maybe 45 minutes to an hour ahead of time, stop in and do their recording, and then go on from there. Also, you know, we have those volunteers who don't want to leave their homes that early in the morning. They have the Kansas City Star delivered to their homes, and they can also just record then from home right into the system. But we really prefer people to come in where we have sort of a controlled situation, and you won't hear cell phones going off in the background, for instance. So they can come into our studios where it's nice and quiet, and we have a controlled atmosphere where they can do their recording.
And Steve has, I forgot, four, five, six soundproof recording booths that are really slick that people can go in and do their recordings. And then they start their live reading of newspapers on their, what, eight? I think 8 o'clock, if I remember your schedule right. So the idea of bringing people in from various sources to do reading really expands the offerings that are available. Any radio reading service can work with the Kansas Audio Reader Network if they want to pick up their content when they're not doing original, you know, originating programming themselves. So there are so many options out there to enhance programming, not only via a radio signal, but via the telephone, that the ability for a person who cannot read print, who is either blind, visually impaired, or print handicapped, which means maybe dyslexia, possibly, any reason that a person can't read print, options to obtain information via an audio format in many ways are suddenly exploding, and there is no reason for someone not to be informed and not to take advantage of the different services. Let me give you a quick story. I know we keep heading back to the telephone readers, but this is really sort of the next step after radio reading services, because we're finding that for here in Wichita, our heaviest reading times occur in the middle of the night and in the late afternoon and evening hours. During the day, our system is almost dead, and that's because most of the people that use the telephone-based reading service are working, going to school, that type of thing. So it's real interesting to watch the trends there as far as reading and access to information. So I'm not sure if that covers everything that you wanted on that question, but back to you, Paul.
It actually doesn't. Clearly, a radio reading service is a kind of a serial event. That is, it operates on a fixed schedule. Things happen one after the other, and you listen to what's on rather than choosing content. But to help our listeners understand a little better how a telephone reading system is different, perhaps one or both of you gentlemen could say a few things about the way a telephone reading system works. Perhaps you could also talk about the mix of human voice and text-to-speech and where either or both have advantages and what they are.
I'm going to take advantage of my telephone here, and I'm going to call into our telephone reader just to give you a real quick example what it sounds like.
This is the Air Capital Telephone Reader, a service of the Information Access Association, made possible with contributions from Intrust Bank.
Now, each person is assigned a user ID and security code so we don't violate copyright laws, so I will log in.
Now entering. Today is Tuesday, April 4th. For the Wichita Eagle, press 1. For the Wichita Business Journal, press 2. For the New York Times, press 3. For the Leisure Reading Section, press 4. For USA Today, press 5. And for the Telephone Reader News Desk, press 9.
So we will select the local paper. And note, I will tell you, the system will tell you what day's paper is online.
For the Wichita, online articles are from the Tuesday issue of the Wichita Eagle.
Now, once in that section of the paper, you've selected that sector, that publication, you can choose which part you want to hear.
Nation and World, 11. Local and State, 12. Business and Aviation, 13. Obituaries, 14. Columnists, 15. Editorials, 16. The Living Section, 17. Sports.
Well, you get the idea. We'll go into Local and State, and now you're going to hear some text-to-speech.
Local and State, 26 articles in this category.
Article 1, 5.5 minutes, from the front page. Wittig, Blake sentenced in Wester Plot, by Dan Margulies, Kansas City Star, calling them greedy, self-centered.
Now you notice at the beginning of that article, we told you how many, first of all, we told you how many articles were in the category, or that section, and we told you by article number which article you're on, and gave you an estimated reading time of 250 words a minute, based on that speed, how long that article's going to run. But if old Perfect Paul is too slow...
More than 3 years ago, at a lengthy hearing in Topeka, U.S. District Judge Julie Robinson, at a lengthy hearing in Topeka, U.S. District... At a lengthy hearing in Topeka, U.S. District Judge Julie Robinson was unfair in her condemnation of the two men...
You can speed him up.
...3 years ago. They had acknowledged the wrong they did. How they were...
To enter pause mode.
Now, let's say you want to check out a word you didn't catch.
Acknowledge.
Okay, the word is acknowledged.
Go back one word.
The word is acknowledged. Spelled S-E-K-N-O-W-L-E-D-G-E-D.
So you can have it spell words and keep you up to date with that information. Now, it's not always perfect. Let's give you an example of text, or rather voice recordings.
Disability News.
This is Disability's News Scan for March 31st, 2006, a collection of articles from newspapers and magazines about disability-related issues in people.
Now, if she's reading too slow for me, I can speed her up as well.
Our first story is entitled Missouri Cup of Love Lasts 60 Years. This is out of Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Leroy Reinagle.
All right, we'll drop out of that. So the telephone reader gives the person complete control. If you don't want to hear an article, touch the right button on your touch-tone pad, and you'll skip to the next article. Want to hear it again? You can skip back. One of the things when I decided it was time to do a telephone reader service, I was sitting actually at work one day with my radio on, listening to the reading of the newspaper in the background, and I was real interested in a particular article. And the lady said, well, you pretty well know the rest of that story. We'll go to the next one. And I said, wait a minute, lady. I don't know the rest of the story. Come back. Of course, she didn't hear me. So the telephone gives the reader complete control over their content. We feel it's real important that we can mix voice, human voice recordings with text-to-speech, and you can do that within a publication. Now, you don't have to separate it out. You can mix them up. Steve Kincaid has done an excellent job in programming and doing the software work on this product, and the options are almost unlimited. Steve, any other comments about telephone reader that you want to make that I may have skipped?
Well, I might add that some people don't like the text to speech sound, and so they prefer the human voice. An example of that is the Braille Institute in Los Angeles uses the USA Today text to speech version first, and then as they have volunteers come in, they read it with the human voice. And they match the articles in the text-to-speech to the human voice articles, and as those humans read those articles, those replace then the text on the system so that you don't hear the text-to-speech version. It's really up to the user. If they like the human voice, they can use that. If they want text-to-speech, they can use that.
Oh, okay, Steve, one question for you. How many systems do you currently have out there in the United States running the telephone reader software now?
Well, I should have probably counted that before we before we did that. But I think at the last time I counted, it was around 20. The number 23 pops in my head. And some of those are multiple numbers in state, like the state of Ohio, for instance, actually, they just took their four regional servers and put them all into one. So I guess I have to subtract four from that. There are some situations where there are multiples in a state, but it's around 20.
Well, we have not really talked about the NFB Newsline system, and I'm not much of an authority on that. In the past, I have used Newsline. On Newsline, it again is a telephone dial-up service. All of their content is text-to-speech. They have no human voice on there that I'm aware of. But understand, I've not had access to NFB Newsline now for a couple, 3 years. They publish a lot of papers each day, quite a few papers. I don't even know how many, but a lot of papers from all around the country will give you a vast array of information to choose from. But here again, they're using the text-to-speech technology as we're using on our telephone reader services. As I understand it, currently the NFB Newsline is only available in those states that provide funding to NFB to participate. Right now, Kansas is not one of those states, and that's why I do not have access to use it anymore. When I did have access to Newsline, I enjoyed, when I had time, listening to the Wall Street Journal. That was one publication that I did really enjoy.
Thanks. It's difficult to know how to classify Newsline in context, but let's look at least one issue. The NFB in general says to states that they want a pretty substantial amount of money in order to provide that service in a given state. Let me ask the two of you to comment on just how expensive it is to get into the telephone reader business, and also then how difficult it is to produce particularly text-to-speech material.
As far as the Air Capital telephone reader system goes, we are, in my opinion, in a very unique situation. I am employed as operations officer and telecommunication manager for Intrust Financial Corporation, which is a bank holding company. We have approximately 47 branches located in Kansas and Oklahoma. And the bank generously allows me to use phone lines on our phone system for telephone reader activity, as well as local numbers in other areas that are essentially just call forward back to Wichita for the telephone reader service. For a telephone reader project, telephone lines are the most expensive proposition. Our service runs mean and lean. We have no paid staff. Everybody involved in the program is doing so on a voluntary basis. We rent a small office. I call it a big closet in the main bank building. We have all of our equipment there and our supplies and everything like that. Preparing content is actually a little bit easier than it used to be if you're just doing text-to-speech, because so much content is available via the web, and that's how we basically obtain our information for our newspaper, which is the Wichita Eagle. We've got a good working relationship with the paper, and that's a key element there. If you have a good working relationship with your local newspaper, that is a key to success. They, in our case, they provide us with essentially the same content that is sent off to their web developers, and it's put on an FTP site. My vice president, who's a night owl, processes the paper. Many mornings, we will have the newspaper online available for people to read by 1:30 or 2 a.m., long before it's delivered to the front porches of people around the city. Steve is doing a lot of work with text-to-speech and retrieving content and that type of thing. I'll let him address his views on that topic now.
Well, most of our text content these days comes from the web. Part of the telephone reader package is a software program called Web Hunter, which the term exists now. It's called scraping text, which you remove the text from HTML pages, but that term wasn't around when we first started doing it. But we used the Web Hunter to scrape the text off of web pages and to automatically then save it into the proper publications and categories for each segment on the telephone reader system. Before that, yeah, we did have special relationships with each publisher that we wanted to carry. We would work with them and get the text from their archive people or from their web departments, and all that stuff would be FTP'd around. But since the web and most newspapers have websites, they have people who are putting that information on their websites, we can work directly with those people and get the same text ahead of time that they use.
So you have different methods of gathering information. Sometimes it will be direct from the publishing newspaper, other times from the web, and then other times you're letting volunteers actually read the hard printed newspaper. I see it as basically you go to the easiest and most efficient way to gather the information, to get it processed and get it on to whatever system, whether it's a radio reading service or a telephone service, that you can, so people can have access to that information as early in the day or as close to the time that their sighted friends and coworkers and family members could also have access to the same content.
So the only question that you guys so far have not really approached is if I here in Miami decided, okay, I don't like my radio reading service and I want, I think there's a market for a telephone reader here in Miami and I want to set up that system. Maybe I should really ask Steve Kincaid to give us some idea of what it would cost us to buy the hardware and then some general notion of what the telephone costs for operating the system are.
Well, for the telephone reader system, to get you in the door with a four-line system, and this would just be four telephone lines, but you can always add to it later. A four-line system you can get with a computer, and you know, of course there, that can vary how much horsepower you want, but you could get a four-line system, the telephone card, and a computer for around $8,000. Each phone line is probably going to cost you in the neighborhood of $50 a month if you're just going to accept local calls and you won't have an 800 number. And then any type of staffing above that you want to do, you can. But again, like an example is, you know, Steve Bauer is just doing it all volunteer power altogether. At Audio Reader, we do have one paid staff person that's full-time that administers the volunteer reading that is done. So yeah, you'll have that cost, but that's up to you. If you can get it done with volunteer administrators, that would be, you know, the preferred method. But the human cost is the greatest cost to administer the program. The phone lines, that's going to be an ongoing cost. You know, every month you're going to incur those costs of the telephone line. The software and the computer and the telephone cards, that's a one-time upfront cost. And then every time you want to grow the system, you know, it'd be roughly around $1,500 to $2,000 for every four lines that you want to add for the hardware and software upgrades to go with that.
All right. We're almost to the point where I'm going to open it, and thank you, everyone, for being as patient as you have been. I have just really one more major question to ask, and that is kind of the intersection of technology. When radio reading services first started, they essentially were the only game in town. But I don't think we're anywhere near in that situation any longer. Steve Bauer, you already talked about podcasts. Given the existence of podcasts, given the existence of individual newspapers, websites, and given the existence of whole newspapers located on Bookshare that NFP puts up there and makes available in those states where there's funding, are you guys, A, seeing any decline in the number of people who are interested in your services, and B, do you perceive that there is a short shelf life perhaps in the future for traditional radio reading services? Do you see us moving to a place where we either diversify or die, I guess is at least to a degree my question.
The changing technology is going to have a dramatic effect on the delivery of audio content or content in general in an accessible format to blind or visually impaired people. Every 18 months, we double the amount of technology that's out there. What will the future bring? One of the things that I've said from the beginning when we started the Air Capital Telephone Reader Service in 1996 is that we're not here for the long term. I'm not planning to have this organization be here for 50 years. At some point in the future, is it 5 years from now? Is it 10 years from now? I turn out the lights because there's going to be something out there that's going to take the place of this service and it won't be needed. And the same thing is going to happen with radio reading services. But I don't have a crystal ball to tell you what it's going to be. Whatever service is out there, most importantly, in my opinion, it has to be very easy to access. It can't be hard to use because you're going to have a lot of people that aren't technically inclined that are going to need to use it. And it's got to be very simple, very easy to use, very easy to access, and affordable or free. Podcasting is going to do some, but podcasting is not going to give you content from newspapers. So, Kincaid, you want to add to that?
Well, one of the things I always say on the public radio side about, you know, the different types of competition that come along is that when there were only newspapers and AM radio came along, everybody thought, well, that's the end of newspapers. And then when FM radio finally caught on, well, that was going to be the end of AM radio. On and on with all types of technology, the web, that's going to be the end of this of newspapers. Well, these technologies tend to find their niches and find their audiences, and so they tend to complement each other, and the user is really the person who wins, because now, you know, I don't have to wait till the newspaper comes out to find out a news story. I can go to the web and find it, or a sports score or whatever. But I still watch the evening news. I still read the newspaper. I just have another choice to get the information.
Two final components that we haven't talked about. One is the emergence of satellite radio, and the other is the evolution, if we ever get there, towards digital radio. In terms of satellite radio, I've been fascinated by the fact that what began, at least to a degree, as primarily a means for making digital, reasonably high-quality music available to folks, has now expanded to the point where it's delivering as much information as anything else. XM Radio is contemplating later this spring launching regional networks that will provide news and talk that are specifically designed for the Northwest, the Southwest, the Midwest, and so on, which will operate in addition to the fairly substantial components of news and information that we already have. Do you think that satellite radio will have an impact? And I guess I'd say the same thing in terms of digital radio. And the last question that's kind of related to these new technologies as well is the emergence of digital radio and satellite radio making it more difficult for radio reading services to find places to broadcast because of the fact that there are alternative uses that are coming into play for SCAs?
I think that what we're going to see is potentially a little bit of intrusion into this field as far as some content being delivered by your XM or your Sirius satellite companies. But there again, you've got to pay that subscription fee. And with a radio reading service or a telephone reader service, there's no subscription fee. With the HD digital radios, most FM broadcast stations will have three channels that they can work with. HD.1, which will be a digital broadcast of their analog signal. HD.2, which will be a full stereo high fidelity radio station. A different format, something totally different than the analog. And then they've got this little sliver out there that's designed to be a low bandwidth mono channel, HD.3. which is for news, talk, and information, interviews, and that type of thing. There's going to be a lot of competition for those HD.3 channels, in my opinion, from special ethnic groups, foreign language broadcasts, that type of thing. I think those are going to be tremendously difficult for a radio reading service to secure based on the small number of people that a radio reading service does serve. And as long as the SCA can remain an option for transmission of radio reading services, I think they're going to remain there. Steve, am I on target, or you're totally off?
I think you're pretty close. It's still really very early to really say what will happen with those HD2 and HD3 channels. Interestingly enough, the HD1, the HD2, and the HD3, all of those HD components of the station don't have as great a signal coverage area as the analog does. So in some cases, you may actually lose area that you're serving if you move your reading service from the subcarrier to your HD3. It'll be some time, really, if the receivers are out in the field. Receivers are in the real world being operated by real users before we find out how well it's all going to be accepted.
Excellent. Guys, I think I'm going to open this up to see if people have comments or questions for you gentlemen. I'd like to, by the way, thank both of you for a truly wonderful presentation. And Mr. Bauer, your demonstration was quite stellar. So let me open it up. Please remember to say who you are and where you're from, and then feel free to either offer opinions or raise questions, and let's move ahead.
Hi, this is Brian Charlson out of Watertown, Massachusetts. Two quick questions. One is, do you see any place for speech recognition as a means of navigating these systems? And Two, I've seen more and more emphasis on RSS feeds where individuals, rather than reading a newspaper, are really taking advantage of what amounts to a clipping service to compose, if you will, their own idea of what it is they want to read from whatever the source might be. And that could really allow an individual to generate their own newspaper as a composite of all the other newspapers. What kind of impact might that have?
I'm not sure it's going to have a major impact, because even many people that are using our telephone reader service don't have computers. And as far as voice recognition goes, I don't think it would work. I think it would not, it wouldn't be fast enough, because you'd have to be able to break in loud enough over the text-to-speech for the system to hear you. And I think it'd be faster to just hit the touch tone. Plus, if you're sitting on a bus or riding in a car or maybe even reading at night when your partner is sound asleep, I'm sure it would go over well. Next, next, back, and saying words like that. So I don't think speech recognition is really going to have much of a impact or a role in telephone reader services. Kincaid?
Well, the only thing I wanted to just quickly add is that the capability will be there. We're currently working on like the version 4 of Telephone Reader, and version 4 of Telephone Reader has that capability, but I tend to and always have sort of have agreed with Steve on this, that it's much easier and quicker and quieter to just access use the touch tones than try to use the speech recognition. Technically, there's no reason why it can't be done. It's just, I think, quicker, less intrusive for people around you if you just use the touchstones.
Another question or comment?
Yeah, Rich from Philadelphia.
Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, I'm pretty technically oriented into transmitting different signals and subcarriers and exciters and stuff. Well, there was talk not too long ago about the SCA. You know, the SCA has a deviation of about 10 kc wide, and the possibility was, when you were talking about the digital 1, 2, and 3 channel, that, you know, the analog is going to be there for a while, but then the stereo analog is going to disappear, and that will open the doors for the FCC to allow the deviation of the subcarrier that's analog now to be wider, so therefore we'll be able to transmit a digital signal on that analog subcarrier. That is one good way of saving the radio reading services.
Would either Steve like to comment on the Philadelphia point, Rich's point?
Steve Kincaid here. That's, you know, somewhat possible. There is a company, and I was just trying to look it up here while I was online. DRE comes to mind. It's a company that is already researching the digital subcarrier aspect as well as the main carrier. But, you know, that's all. None of that has been approved yet by the FCC, and we're really still in the infancy of digital radio. Whether or not it'll even be successful is yet to be seen. Only the very first receivers are making it their way to the marketplace, and later in about May and June of this year, you'll see a larger choice of receivers that are available. I've gotten a few of the early the first run of Boston Acoustics Receptor HD radios to try, and haven't really been very impressed with their performance. A lot of money has been spent on HD radio, both from the development side, from Ubiquiti Corporation, who owns the patents and the licensing, to the radio operators who have built in the infrastructure to be able to do it. But yet we really don't know whether the consumer will buy into it. And the FCC currently has no rules on the books to regulate it. So where analog radio will go, it may not change at all. We may be in this hybrid mode for the next 20 years.
One of the questions that sort of saddened me is the American Council of the Blind, really from the very early stages of the implementation of digital radio, has urged the FCC to get involved, not only to create some rules that would be protective of radio reading services options, but perhaps most importantly, to assure that there was at least some effort made to assure usability, if not full accessibility, for digital radio receivers, we've seen really virtually no compliance on the part of the FCC in terms of that direction. So it's another reason, I think, why we ought to hope, I think, as blind people at the moment, that digital radio does go pretty slowly. Let me open it for another comment.
This is Steve again, if I can just add one thing. The real future for digital broadcasts for reading service, I think, lies with digital television. There's so much bandwidth there that a voice channel would go completely without notice to a television broadcaster. That technology already exists and could be made available through those television broadcasters. So the FM, we're packing so much in there now with the digital signal and the SCAs and RDBS and various other signals. There's really not a lot of room in there for anything else. But the television broadcasters have this huge data pipe that they're broadcasting every day, four channels or two channels or three channels in high definition. A voice channel would go, that bandwidth would go unmissed by the television broadcasters.
This is Lisa Hall in San Antonio, Texas. I have a comment to make about radio reading service. Based on my observation, it is my understanding that some radio reading services are now doing their broadcasting on the Internet, some requiring password and others do not. I know that New Orleans has a radio reading service, and it is transmitted through the regular radio and not through FM receivers. And I wondered how many of the radio reading service require you to use receivers as opposed to it being open-ended on regular radios.
Well, I think Brad Martin is on here and Jay Dowden, and they can probably answer the question as well. But isn't it Memphis or is it Nashville? It must be Memphis that is also open channel.
Hi, this is Brad Martin. Memphis is open channel as well as New Orleans. I understand Memphis is undergoing some restructuring and is probably, I can't confirm this, but I don't think they're doing as much with radio reading. I think the library has kind of found some other uses for that service. Most of us do have receivers that we loan out to people. By the way, this is Brad Martin in Mobile, Alabama. I am the director of the radio reading service here and also a board member of the International Association of Audio Information Services. Most of our services do use specialized receivers or, in some cases, the SAP channel of television. I do find that a lot of us are going to Internet streams as a means of either offering live broadcasts or, in some cases, on-demand archives of what we read, and in some cases both. Passwords, no passwords, different services treat it differently. We used passwords for a while and found that when people would go to apply for a password, that they would fill out the form incompletely. They didn't want to give us their information, and so they wouldn't fill out the form. We'd get incomplete forms, and the system would reject. And we felt like people were not signing up for the service because of their concern for their privacy, and we didn't want anyone to feel like they couldn't use our services. So most of us do use specialized receivers. I think that if digital takes off the way that some of us hope that it will, I know that the International Association is working to try to arrange it so that we don't have to be in the specialty receiver business anymore, that it can be a subscription service that we as services can activate on your regular digital radio that you go out and buy, much the way cable services would allow you to access premium channels. That would open up the ability of people to receive the service who need it without having to get special radios from us.
Thanks very much, Brad. That really does help the issue. I'll recognize the gentleman for follow-up.
Yeah, okay, this is Rich, Philadelphia. A couple of minutes ago, somebody mentioned, I think it was Steve, I'm not quite sure, but mentioned about that digital doesn't get as far as analog. Well, that's not necessarily true. With digital, it's either the signal is there or it's not there. In TV, if the signal is there, you'll get snow on the screen. And it's like FM. FM, the signal doesn't have to be full quieting, but if you can hear it, it's fine. But with digital, it's either there or it's not there. The transmitters are still, our transmitter is still putting out the same amount of power. It's just with a digital transmitter, you're feeding all the other subcarriers. With all the generators that are involved going into the main final transmitter section, the power amplifier section, that's what's happening, that all that power is distributed across a wider bandwidth in TV. Digital has got a way to go, But you're right about in TV, but the FM band is a good band because the characteristics of an FM band is a lot better and goes a lot further than the characteristics of UHF TV or the higher frequencies, like, you know, from channel 7 going up to channel 12. Because the higher in frequency you go, the more power you have to put out, and the characteristics of UHF and higher VHF are different than it is the low VHF.
Another question or comment?
Hi, this is Brad Martin again. I'd like to address the topic briefly of radio reading services. We've talked a lot about the new technology and the digital technology and the telephone technology and the computer technology. And I think it's important, and Steve kind of touched on this in the beginning, to indicate I think radio reading services still have a way to go before they're outlive their usefulness, in the sense that I just sent out 4 radios today to 4 more people who are going to use the service. We have about 400 radios out in a 2-county area. And I think that's because, A, it's a choice. It's another option that people have to obtain information, and some people actually prefer it. B, particularly with older people who, as we talked about, don't really want to do the technology thing. How many people have you heard talk about the fact that they hate those phone things where you have to press 1 and press 2 and press 5 and they just want to have somebody read it? And C, for a lot of those folks, it provides a level of companionship for them. And we've certainly experienced that with some of our listeners. We're all computer users in this particular meeting, and so as a result, we're used to having information access when we want it. I liken the radio reading service model to television. You pretty much know that the nightly news is going to come on at 5 or 6 or whatever time it is in your area, and you pretty much know that Wheel of Fortune is going to come on at a particular time. And similarly, I think we know that, at least in my area, USA Today is going to be on at 11:30 a.m. and at 2 o'clock we're going to have the New York Times or whatever. So I think that for a lot of people, they're going to find that the access options, the more the better, while some of us are doing more technological things. For example, my service also puts our files out on the internet, and we also stream. I think the old style radios are going to be around a while in some capacity, whether it's digital or analog. I think you'll always have a core listener group who is just comfortable with flipping a switch and having access to whatever it is they've come to expect. While I don't think it's the only avenue, I don't think it's a closed road either.
Hi, this is Satana in New York, and I hope everybody can hear me. And I wonder if there is a central repository anywhere, online or something like that, where somebody has written up where all of the radio reading services are and sort of, you know, basic contact information for them and so forth.
There is a website, and again, I mentioned that I'm on the board of the International Association of Audio Information Services. I would encourage you to go to iaais.org, and there you can find websites of radio reading services. I'm not certain. I think Steve can tell us whether the database is fully operational again or not. Generally, yes, that is information that is available from iaais.org. The services that are offering webcasts, a lot of them are listed on a page for listening to radio reading services. So, yes, that information is available fairly easily.
We did the development to integrate that website into the iaais.org server. It's all been updated and is accessible and online now.
Other question or comment?
This is Jay in Philadelphia. I wanted to get back to what Steve was talking about earlier. Both Steves, in fact, earlier on were talking about the dial-up services and news lines and so on. And I was wondering, in your mind, Steve Bauer, whether you think that you mentioned initially that you tried to work with the Wichita Radio Reading Service, and of course then you decided to start your own telephone news service. How do you see the two coexisting? And of course they do very well, and as has been demonstrated with the audio reader in Lawrence, Kansas. And why do you think there isn't more of that going on in other parts of the country?
I think that, as in the case here with Wichita, a radio reading service tends to feel or can feel that a dial-up or telephone service is a threat, that we're trying to put them out of business, and that's not at all the case. Let me give you one example how I would love to be able to work with the Wichita Radio Reading Service. One of our more popular categories is the obituaries. Listening to obituaries read by Perfect Paul is pure hell. It's just worthless as far as I'm concerned. I would love to be able to work with the WRRS, for example, to have them provide me with an MP3 of their reading of the obituaries. For example, they could take that MP3, let's just call it a podcast, if you will. They put that file on an FTP site. I know they read obits from, let's just say they read them from 10 to 10:15. So at 10:30, I start looking for that MP3 file. As soon as that file is available, my system grabs it, processes it, puts it on my telephone reader service, and now I've got a volunteer reader speaking the obituaries in a very nice format that is easily understood. That's the kind of cooperation that I see as a real plus. If services are willing to work together, they can share resources, they can share content. Steve Kincaid and I pass content back and forth, different publications. He fixes up some, I fix up, and we share them back and forth and make that available on both of our systems.
Is there another question or comment?
I just wondered if the library in Memphis is phasing out the radio reader service, or at least sacrificing it, watering it down, what would people in that area be able to do about that?
Mr. Martin, you raised this issue. Are you minded to respond?
My knowledge of the subject is quite limited. I know there was a program that we used to get from Memphis that has since gone away, or at least I haven't been able to get information about it. And the information that I have read is kind of not anything official that I've read, so I don't know that I would be qualified to comment on exactly what the situation is. I had gotten an email from someone and so forth saying they were playing more music on the station, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know the details. I don't know the person involved. I'm sure they are still using it as a reading service in some sense. The station is WYPL, and you could probably do better, get more official information by going to WYPL's website and attempting to find out what they're using the station for and what who the people in charge would be and who you would talk to about that. I'm not comfortable naming names because I don't even know anymore who is involved. If someone else does, you know, that's fine. I just don't feel like I have the information in front of me to be specific.
I'd like to thank everyone from Radio Reading Services who joined us this evening. I'd like to thank Brad Martin and Jay Doudna, who gave their time to kind of provide us with some ancillary information, as well as Rich in Philadelphia. And in particular, I'd like to thank Steve Bauer and Steve Kincaid for providing us with lots of food for thought on a topic that is certainly one that's of interest to many blind people. Radio Reading Services clearly are providing a service to a large population of people who depend on them for the information that is vital to them every day. Clearly as well, technology is changing the way that we can deliver that information and is making a range of options available for information delivery that I think over the next few years will only become larger. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in this evening to Tuesday Topics. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will begin the first of two programs on the American Foundation for the Blind. Our guest next week will be Paul Schrader, who will tell us about some of the many programs that the American Foundation for the Blind is operating, and we'll talk about some of the initiatives that are beginning to be launched through the American Foundation for the Blind. I hope you'll join us next week to get an idea about some of the many components that the American Foundation is using to make lives better for people who are blind. Join us next week on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.